Hello and welcome to We're Watching What? I'm your host Dana, or the DHK as I'm known, and we watched two things this week. We started off with the new Alex Garland film, Civil War, a major spoiler alert for that one. We then watched Dev Patel's directorial debut, Monkey Man, again, major spoiler alert for that. And then a little bit of a content warning for our We're Watching What section. We talk about a few documentaries and shows that handle some pretty heavy material, so just wanted to give you a heads up. We'll talk about things like Quiet on the Set, which is that Nickelodeon documentary, Brandy Hellville, which is the Brandy Melville documentary, scarier that is about real world things. So just giving you a bit of a warning there. And now without further ado, here's We're Watching What? Okay, so we watched Civil War. I have a checkered history with Alex Garland. Some of it is because of just like personal interactions. Some of it is just his films don't resonate with me. I know you are a fan, so I'm curious. I'm not of all of us. Of course, you know, there are criticisms, but what did you think of Civil War?
So of his films, this, even before I was familiar with him as a director, but Ex Machina, you know, like when it was coming out, I was very interested in that movie because it was very like, ooh, what is that?
You know? Oh, I love Ex Machina. Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, like the trailer was, I was like, I didn't care who directed it. I didn't know him.
Of course, you
know?
Yeah.
So it was like, I loved it. And then with Annihilation, after loving Ex Machina, I was very excited. And then I also thought it looked great. It's my Natalie, like, all these things. This, I like the cast and I'm a fan of Alex's movie. So I was like, I'm excited to see the new Alex Garland film. The trailer did not excite me because it's just so damn like, you know, like it's, I think, and I, we can get into the discussion, but I think, and rightfully so, I think that's the point, right?
Yeah.
But it just is, it's one of those things where I'm like, I go to the movies for escapism, not for,
not the for news. Like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so I don't want to say I was like excited counting down the days for it because I knew it was going to be a heavy experience, mm-hmm. but I was looking forward to it because it's the new Alex Garland film and I thought it looked good. And I came out of it thinking pretty much just that I did think it was good and well done. I think it was successful in accomplishing what it set out to do. I don't think I'm going to be like soon rewatching it because it was just
sure. Yeah.
Heavy as hell. Like it should be, I guess. But like not fun in any way.
No, there was not a moment.
Not that every film has to be fun, but I can have fun watching a not fun movie, but this is right. Not a fun watch. Like,
yeah,
I watched it on an IMAX screen and mm-hmm. I came out of it with a headache. Just based on the gunfire, just it was so much, and I was like, this feels intentional the way it was sound mixing was done. And I was like, it was, but I have to tell you, like, maybe I'm just a little like on edge because, you know, theater shootings and things that happen, but I jumped out of my skin several times in this movie because it was so loud and it would just shock me the shots. And I was like, and it just had me like, I felt uneasy the whole time.
Yeah, which to its credit, its job, right? And
right.
It's very, so where in the theater did you sit out of curiosity?
I was pretty central. Like I wasn't like low down toward the front, but I wasn't high up. So pretty middle and toward the center.
Okay. I think this speaks to the power of positioning and seating. And this isn't related to the movie per se, but so I was seated like almost in the back row of an IMAX theater. I was at the Chinese. My seat was assigned to me. I like didn't get a choice, whatever.
That's a big theater too.
It's a big theater, right? For folks who don't. Yeah. And it's also not necessarily like, you know, more stadium-y IMAX. And so there were moments where I was startled, but I don't think I had the same like terrified experience that you did in part because also I could like hear the door behind me and people were like talking in the lobby and stuff like that. But I think, you know, it is, if you were positioned properly, I could absolutely see how that would make the experience even more enhanced.
Yeah. And this was the CityWalk AMC. And I find that in the AMC IMAXs or IMAX screens, CityWalks is my favorite for the sound alone. Like I do find that I get the most like, I remember at the 25th anniversary of Jurassic Park, I went to, they did a screening of it there.
Mm-hmm.
And when the T-Rex would growl, like the seats were vibrating.
Oh, that would be the dream.
So, because it was so just like, not because it's a prime theater. It was just like, and I was like, I think that something about that IMAX screen is intense.
Yeah. And obviously this is, you know, specific to the location we're in, but these are some of the, you know, most prime, but anyway, the theater going experience and like the design of the film itself, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things I always evaluate when I'm reviewing a film is I'm like, do you need to see this in a theater? And, you know, I give credit where credit is due. Like the visuals are certainly built for IMAX. You know, the sound design is meant for IMAX or even a theater, right? A screen, right?
Sure.
Like not necessarily even IMAX, but they made a big deal about the IMAX. And so like, I'm like, yeah, no, this is a big screen movie. The subject matter, however, is where my more of the fence for me comes into play. Because
yeah, it's big on like, oh, did you watch the trailer? Are you interested in that? Are you wanting to see it? Then yeah, you should do it in a theater if you're wanting to see it.
Yeah,
right. Like, but if this is your movie, but
right.
But if not, you could do this at home and have the experience that you need to have, because it's not less disturbing at home. You know,
right.
Or,
well, and
not that the aim is to disturb, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I think the question is this your movie? Is where
right.
like the real thing I'm grappling with is, and yeah. you know, I respect the craftsmanship of it. It's not my movie. Like I
think it was accurately represented in the trailer, which I appreciate. It wasn't like
oh, you do feel it was.
I felt it was like
okay.
I felt
because I didn't
like,
watch the trailers. Glad. I just kind of was like, oh,
okay,
I know
yeah.
I will have to see this.
But I watched the trailer. I remember like I woke up one morning. It was like, oh, trailer for Civil War, the new Alex Garland film, and I didn't know what it was, but I knew yeah. it because he had a new movie come out, and I was like, ooh, and I like watched the trailer, and then I was like. Huh. I was like, that's not going to be fun.
No,
and,
yeah.
And so it felt accurately represented in that. I didn't feel like I got tricked into being in there, you know.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. And we're back.
I will say I did expect more of a political message in the film based on the trailer.
Yeah.
I will like something, I mean, if we're going to go into spoiler territory here.
Yes.
I think something that, like my friend had said, that something she didn't like about it, and then was that, you know, we're following these journalists the whole time,
yeah,
and it never does go to a level of depth where like you ever get to really learn what the conflict is and like what happened and why there's a civil war
yeah.
going on in America,
yeah.
And she was like, I wish we could have gotten more information there because I could have gotten more invested in like the what of it all, like what's going on.
Yes.
And I agreed with her. I was like, that's my least favorite thing about it, but it's also kind of my favorite thing about it because I liked that
right.
we're following these journalists who have to be objective. And they and so the why of it all actually isn't important to them. It is as people, but to the job they're doing and the journey we're on with them, the why doesn't matter. It's about getting the shot and getting the
yeah.
reporting. And I thought that was an interesting perspective.
Yeah. And I think to the film's credit, like the second you attribute a cause to it, it becomes a less inclusive film, right? Because
yes.
currently you get to project aside. And so this is partially where like my beef with it stem from is that as an American, because Alex Garland is not an American, you know, he probably lives here at some point, this point. But if you were to tell me California and Texas are in yeah. an alliance together, I'd be like, you are out of your damn mind. Like, and you know, in a film that takes place in effectively modern day, right? Like this film could take place. I mean, it's meant to feel like it takes place today, tomorrow, now. And I'm just like, ideologically, you could not have picked two states further from alignment. And I heard this in an interview that he addressed it, but I was like, I shouldn't have to hear this in an interview, right? I should hear this in like the movie itself should, is that the, you know, whatever the administration that they are rebelling against is so offensive to both of them that they would rather work with each other, like enemy of my enemy, right? But I'm just
yeah.
like, by not taking a stance on it, and you know, it feels like you're trying to be overly manipulative and be like, oh, I'm not taking a stance, but I've got like one of the most liberal, one of the most conservative states. But also, you know, there are spectrums.
It also feels like it's preachy almost. Cause
yeah.
it's funny. I didn't hear that in an interview. My assumption was that was in an effort to remove the political.
An obvious lean one way or another.
Yeah, because I was like, so I liked it until you just said that, because I was like, okay, so we're going to take the largest red power, really. I mean, when you talk about state size
yeah,
and population
yeah.
and like again with the largest
also probably
blue
like
power
militaries
and say,
yeah
and say that they were both attacked by this government, and so whatever this issue is, it doesn't have anything to do with our real life, our real world.
Yeah,
like, that's what I took from that. But then saying it kind of like, oh, this government was so blah blah blah, that it was, and I'm like, okay, well now you're sounding like
yeah because I'm like, you know, name to me the issue that would be so divisive that would align those two states.
Well, because then at that point,
no, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Like, there's
at that point, I want
nothing.
The creativity.
I can't think of anything.
Well, because then at that point, I demand the. I want to hear what that is. Then, like, write
yeah,
me something
right,
that is that interesting.
Right.
You know. So then it's like now I'm missing that you're this phantom thing that seems impossible. Like, convince me it's possible. Because
right.
that would be fascinating.
Yeah.
So,
well, and again, so that's where, and I will acknowledge a bias, and I was probably like looking at things to pick at.
No, but I
agree
with that.
It is glaring,
yeah.
right? As an American in modern day, I was just like,
yeah.
ugh. And then I thought Kirsten Dunst was spectacular in this.
She
like
was,
I thought she
yeah.
was very good. They were all idiots.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I say this acknowledging that like, it is probably, I'm sure they did a lot of interviews with like actual war journalists and stuff like that. But I was just like, every decision feels stupid.
Yeah.
And I get it. I get that that is, it's probably me being overly judgmental of like people who actually live this as lives, et cetera. But I was just like, oh my God, to get the shot, to do whatever. It felt like projecting as a film, like him projecting his goals or whatever. It was like the desires to get that one shot or be in the fray or whatever it was. I was just like, okay.
Yeah. Like you could start to bridge on like a pretentious feeling. That's like,
yes. Right.
Like from him. And yeah. I could see that. But I agree. I thought the performance was great. I thought performances across the board were pretty decent.
Yeah.
I thought Wagner was amazing in it too. And like,
I mean, and also Stephen Henderson, like you can't, you know, yeah. I was just like,
and then I saw in the credits that Jin Ha was that one sniper. And I was like, how interesting. This was actually filmed a while back, I guess.
Oh.
And I was like, I guess I probably wouldn't have known who that was before I watched Pachinko.
I did,
but
not.
It was just funny because, like, I saw the clip and I was like, "Jin Ha was in this movie," but
yeah,
you didn't see.
But
his
I guess
face.
It was. I mean, good job. He was well camouflaged.
Yeah, but I was like, you didn't even see a front vision of this guy's face. You just saw a profile, and he just said the line. You know,
I mean,
there
are a few characters who have very impactful, like one scene things.
Yeah.
I mean, the most obvious one being Jesse Plemons, who just shows up and is like the scariest scene ever.
Yeah, I was like holding my breath during that. Like, you know what his. I also did, but I didn't love, though, the way that that was structured to where, like, well, let's bring in these random two people and people of color at that so that we can kill them and not, you know what I mean? Like,
yes. That is one of my beefs, is that I was like, cool. So we are, and this is, I will explain some of my beef with Alex Garland. So, like, one of the big things about Annihilation, and I acknowledge that you have to have read the next book to know this, is that Natalie Portman's character is half, I think she's Chinese, but she's half Asian, right? Like this protagonist character is half Asian. And, you know, I know that we are only adapting the first one, but still, like, this is a defining thing about this character. So to cast Natalie Portman, I was like, meh. And then, like, to cast no Asian people, basically, in that film, and then to adapt it doing whatever, I was just like, what the hell, man? And then seeing this, and he kills off only people of color, effectively.
Yeah.
And I know, eventually, spoiler, but, like, she passed.
But that's in the last minute
and a
half.
But she's also a woman. I was like, cool.
Yeah, but also the last minute and a half of the film. Right.
So it's
like she was in the entire thing. Like,
yes. Yeah. So, I understand that in the world he has set up, probably people of color would go first. So I get it, but, like, this is why it scares me to talk about his films as a person of color sometimes, because, you know, like it or not, I feel like he is becoming one of those directors who ends up with like a radicalized, like almost Snyder-esque audience where you can't speak out against anything they do. Not to say like politically radical, but just, you know, he has become this figure where you cannot question their artistic decisions.
That's silly because
and I'm not saying I don't think he's there yet, but it's this film
you
was like
see the writing
this
the
was
wall,
the beginning of not the beginning this one I was like, oh, I'm a little afraid to review this, like I don't want to, you know, and because of the type of people he would attract with this and like men, right? Like and that's, it's maybe, you know, put them as an audience, there's more of a problem there, but like you're putting it out there, so
I think that all makes sense. But with that scene specifically, what I thought was interesting was that I don't know who the actor was, but I saw Kirsten talk about this, and I don't know who the actor was supposed to be, but
the actor dropped out,
and then Jesse was just like there with the kids, and she was like, "Well, Jesse's here,"
yeah.
And then he ended up being like maybe like the most convincing performance in the whole film.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely terrifying. Yeah,
I'm like, why is he
terrifying.
So good at that? Like, I think Jesse seems like a very pleasant, great person, but in real life, I don't know. But I was like, oh my God, that's
acting. He's so scary. He's such a good scary actor. Like I think of his Black Mirror episode a lot, where I'm just
he's something else. But
And also the not to just to rewind for a second, like, you know, obviously I said like everyone's an idiot, and maybe some of it's just like an inability of me to understand, you know, zealotry to that level, because not just the journalists are dedicated to their roles, you know, the people at the White House, like the Secret Service, who are there to the bitter end. I'm just like, maybe I'm not like loyal enough about any cause that I would lay down my life for it. But at this point, it's game over, man. Like, why are you sacrificing yourself?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Especially because it's like this felt post-apocalyptic. Like this was like, you know, this is not just like, oh, there's unrest.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like at that point,
we're fighting in the streets. We're murdering each other. Like,
yeah. Like the, I don't know if she was the press secretary or who she was, but trying to negotiate.
Yeah, the press secretary.
Like,
yeah.
It was like, I mean, ma'am, you know what I mean? Like, you got to just go. You know, like,
it's, like, look out for number one at this point. Like,
yeah, this is a loss.
Or explain to me what this cause is that you're willing to die over.
Or the decoys that went out, like, to escape to pretend the president. It was like, you knew you were going to die. And it was only going to last so long. Like, the president, where was he going to go at that point? Like, it's like, if you were just doing a negotiation thing, like, why'd you do that at all? Like, you know, it was certain more dumb decisions across the board. But but I think I found kind of fascinating about some of it, too, though, was like the juxtaposition between, like, there would be certain shots that I really loved where it was like such a beautiful shot and the sunset or whatever. And then like the horror on the ground. Like, I thought like that stuff was really powerful to look at. And I felt, I'm going to say I don't like war movies, but I'm not a big war movie guy in general. I've seen plenty of them, but I felt like there was certain stuff in this that I'm not sure I'd really seen before that I kind of liked. I was like interested, like particularly the siege on DC in the whole last like 30 minutes of it. But so much of what was going on, it was so intense that there were moments that like I felt it was just like, it felt real to me. Like I was like, it's just and brutal and real, but the modern, not dilapidated city and just this real, the tanks and the battle at the war. Like it felt like when I see this kind of stuff, usually it's on a battlefield or you're watching a World War II film or you're watching, you know, it's like, but this felt so like, or you're like, we're used to seeing this in the Middle East in movies and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, and it's the way they do that. And it's all sand. And, you know, like, this felt so like, oh my God, like this just looks like LA, you know?
Right.
You're just out there, like, and it was jarring in a weird way that I didn't expect.
Yeah,
like, disturbing. It made it more real, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was very jarring. I actually found the like shootout snipe off, because that was the different thing, but like the shootout with like the colorful, you know, like smoke bombs, and they get, it's like their first embedded.
Thing
that we, but. It felt, and I'm not saying this is a knock, it felt a little video game-ish to me.
That did,
and it's funny because he has written video games before.
Yeah.
So I literally
was like, I bet the Call of Duty crowd loves this. Like, I literally said that.
And
like,
that's what scares me about his audience, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm like, these are the people who, and it's funny because I was looking, I was like, oh, this is kind of like his Avengers assemble of the people he works with.
Yeah.
And then there's literally a grid on his Wikipedia page. And Sonoya Mizuno is the one who's appeared in all of them. So I guess technically there's an Asian person in Annihilation, but it should have been Sinai. Yeah. But I'm just like, oh, this was. I do recall being like, oh, he's really worked in like a lot of his, you know, folks, his constant collaborators.
Also kind of, again, commenting on the political nature or lack thereof, I guess, of real life political nature. I found out that he wrote this during the pandemic and that it actually was pre-insurrection and everything, which I thought was,
oh,
not that I thought this was like, oh, this is the insurrection, but I just mean like,
no, I didn't even think about the insurrection until you mentioned that, but yeah, that's
awesome. And I thought it was fascinating because I saw, it was Kirsten Dunst was talking about with, is her name Haley? I can't think of the actress right now.
Oh, Kaylee.
Kaylee. I saw her talking about, and she was saying, oh yeah. And I guess while they were wrapping filming this was when she got the role to be Priscilla.
Oh.
And Kirsten had called in a good word to Sofia Coppola, but she was talking about, like, you know, but it was a thing where it was like,
I did not even clock that was her.
That was Priscilla. Yeah. And I was like, so this was filmed a while ago, I guess. Cause it's, so I thought that was kind of fascinating because it felt very telling of our like current political climate again. But
as much as I have beef with him, to his credit, he is like a relatively prescient writer, which is scary to me. That's what scares me.
Right. Yeah. It left me feeling unsettled, which again, I think is the purpose of it. But it didn't. That's why I keep saying I don't have a better word than fun, but I'd say enjoyable. Like, it's not something that I'm ever going to enjoy watching again.
Right.
Even though I do think that there were some good artistic things about it that I was like, oh, I liked that. But I can't imagine being like, yes, let's watch that again.
Right. Ever. And I'm also in the position of like, if people ask me, should I go see it? I'm like, if you're asking, like if you have to be asking this question, you haven't already gone. My answer is no.
Probably not. Yeah.
But if you've already gone to see it, like more power to you. But if you were on the fence, I'm like,
yeah.
Well, and hesitation.
I would say, and if someone does ask,
I'm not saying don't watch it later, but like, I don't know.
Totally. But if someone does ask, you can be like, well, what have you watched the trailer? What do you think
right,
of it?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and if someone's just like, oh, I thought the trailer was great, then you probably like,
okay,
would like
have fun.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's pretty, like, I was even talking to my parents about it. My dad was like, well, that looks really, really upset or depressing. And I was
yeah,
like,
yeah, you're like, correct. No, upsetting is also correct.
Yeah, I was going to say, because that's how I felt, but he didn't say, but he said depressing, but yeah, upsetting. It was upsetting.
Yeah. So my friend kept asking me about it. I was like, I am not in good conscience recommending this to them in particular, but I was just like, I'm not going to stop you from seeing it. Because there are plenty of things I've been like, don't do it. I'm like,
well, and you're not coming out of this being like, well, that was just a poorly made film. Like, don't waste your time. It's like,
I do have like some major beef with it, but there are enough highlights from it that I'm like, the Jesse Plemons scene, honestly, like what a show stealer. Like
that in itself could just be a short film and would be as effective as it was in the movie.
That's true. Actually,
it was just like, you could just take, and I felt like a lot of it was that, where it was just a bunch of like, almost like an episodic, where it was like, travel, and now this disturbing thing happens.
Road trip in the history of man.
Yeah, and so it's like a collection of just kind of like short film experiences that a journalist has on the road. And it's like, okay. But to that note, that aided in the kind of feeling of like not a lot of connective tissue throughout. Mm-hmm. And that, again, with not knowing what the conflict is and all that, it did make it feel kind of like a exposition movie.
Yes. Yep.
And so that could certainly be seen as a criticism. I would, So on that note, it's like, I still came out of it thinking like, okay, like, I remember when we were talking about The Northman, I think I brought that up before, and talking about Eggers. And I was like, I've loved his movies so far. And I was like, this is number three. This is going to be like, is he one I watch for always? Or is this like, oh, and I was feeling that way less intensely, but with this kind of, this is my third like directorial with Garland, I think.
And I
came out of it feeling very kind of like, okay, I trust him to make a movie that will entertain me and that I think is like well done.
Yeah.
But this is my least favorite of the three he's made as far as just like an entertainment level.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So. Valid. Yeah. Well, moving on. It was a moment ago, but we saw a different type of violent. We saw
and a directorial
Monkey Man.
Debut.
And a directorial debut. Yeah. And a produced and written by another show, you know, it's their show, we're just living in it. I don't even know. We saw Monkey Man. What did you think?
So obviously this isn't like my go-to genre.
Yes.
Right.
Correct. Yeah.
I love Dev, and I loved this trailer a lot.
Okay. Yes.
I didn't love the film the way I wanted to love the film, but I did not dislike it. I was not bored. Like I enjoyed the film.
Yeah.
I did think it was a tad long for the story we were given.
Yes.
And I did think that, like, it gets to that point where I'm like, okay, like, not to compare him to, like, Bradley Cooper with Maestro, but that kind of idea where
let's
it's like, maybe
not,
we don't
let's not
do,
be rude here.
But maybe we don't, yeah, but like, never. But maybe we don't need to do everything, and maybe we should trust some people to come in and help us with some of it.
Yes.
I say that also completely acknowledging that if I ever wrote a film that I felt like I really want to get this made, I would want to direct it. I would not want someone else to produce it. I would want to do all these things. So I'm like, I don't trust you with my baby. So it's like this thing that I understand it.
Yeah.
But I do think it needed some help in that way.
Well, the other factor that compounds all of that is, I think for me, some of the time that I would, like, the first thing I was like, we can cut this for time, in terms of self-indulgence, is, like, a lot of the training montage stuff, where I was like, okay, we get it. You got in really good shape. Like, congratulations. All you had to do is you take your shirt off, and we get it.
Yeah, I liked the drumming one.
Cool, he's got the beat, and then it went on, and I was like, no.
We don't need this.
Yeah.
I
think the trailer for this one misleading, because maybe this was just me not paying attention. I legitimately thought he was maybe going to be a man with the powers of like an ape strength.
I don't know. I could have seen that though. Like
I did not pay that much attention to the trailer. I just saw a man in a monkey suit and like a suit and a monkey face. And I was like, oh, cool. And also, okay, so this is one of those things. And we talked about this. I can't remember which movies we've talked about this for, but you know, I love Jordan Peele. I think them emphasizing that Jordan Peele was a producer on this was actually a disservice to this film because Jordan Peele has a very distinct style, etc. So you go into a Jordan Peele film thinking, I'm going to get a Jordan Peele film. This is a John Wick film because those are the other producers, like legitimately the other producers of are producers of John Wick.
They even referenced John Wick.
Yes. Yeah. And so I think this is a scenario like a Guillermo del Toro situation.
I was going to say that.
Right, right. Where he's like, I'm
this American moment. And then all of a sudden was like attached to everything as a producer.
Right. And to like in a good way where it's like, this probably isn't going to get made unless like, you know, or made at the scale it is unless somebody lends their name. And so I think Jordan Peele was being helpful in doing this. And I assume he believes in the project. But like when they were like, and from Jordan Peele, I was like, I expect there to be an additional layer to this, and there was not.
Yeah, it was very straightforward. And like, but at the same time, it took long enough, too long to really get to the core of like what the plot was.
Yeah.
That it was like, you really just spent so much time. So I guess I wasn't bored, but I guess I was kind of like, my mind was wandering a little bit until we finally were like, okay, this is what the why of all this. But yeah, it was like, you need to just kind of, let's get to the point faster. Like it was giving me kind of like, when you think of like a similar vibe of a thing, Love Lies Bleeding recently, where it was like, that got to the point. Like, it was just like, here's your story. And it needed that tightening. But I felt like he was trying to flex his kind of artsy fartsy muscles a bit too. And I liked the visuals in this. I didn't love the camera work for a lot of it, but I liked the visuals that would come in some of these exposition scenes and things like that. And, you know, it was emotionally charged and all that. But yeah, it just needed to be tightened.
Yes, agreed. Yeah.
Like, and just, you know. However, I walk away from this saying, Dev Patel can be an action hero any day of the week, whenever he wants. And I was like, not that everyone needs to do a superhero movie, but I was like, who could we cast him as? Like, I was just like, like, can he be Nova? Can he be, like, because I love Dev. And I was just like, let's put him in a suit.
I thought, from a physical standpoint, I thought some of the stuff they were doing was creative. So when we got to some of the more traditional, just like, I'm going to beat up a punching bag, I was like, major spoiler, but I love when all the like trans community comes in and just murders. I mean, it's dark as hell, but just like, you know, murders a bunch of people. I was like, yeah, this is satisfying. Like
it was, yeah, I was going to say, but before that whole ending finale sequence, when that happens, there were a lot of action sequences where I was like, oh, this is falling into that like innocent bystanders, like who cares about you? Like there were just some deaths in this that were like completely unnecessary. And I was like, am I supposed to be rooting for you? It was like, ooh.
There, I can't remember. I don't have my notebook in range, but like there was one death that you could tell we weren't supposed to feel satisfied about, right? Like he's supposed to feel morally ambiguous about, but because of like the structure of the film and, you know, just like the adrenaline, I assume somebody in my audience was like clapping for it. And it was like, no, no.
You're like, no.
No. Yeah. The whole point is he's like, oh, I'm sort of getting what I want. Like, I don't feel that. And then there was another, like there's a scene that follows it that is the sort of clapping thing that like everyone's, I don't know. There were just moments that I was like, I want to say like, trust your audience more, but maybe not based on this.
Yeah, maybe not.
This is one of those where like moments where it's like, oh, trusting the guidance of somebody else being like, I don't know if you need this part.
Well, yeah, and like, give us some more information earlier on.
Yes, yeah.
So we're
invest us earlier. Yeah. More.
And I think it had a villain problem. Like I really liked the lady. I can't remember her name, but I liked her. Like, I mean, as a villain, like, I was not supporting her, but you know.
Yeah, yeah. But she was interesting.
I was like, and the second that he was like in the office trying to get a job there, I was like, this is delicious. I love this. Like, I love her. Like, this is great. And I also, I don't remember her name right now. I have to look it up. But the actress that played, who like, you know, the lady who was working for her, but like she, that they kind of developed a little bond and everything. Not that it has to be some big sweeping love story, but I wanted something more from that. And I thought she was wildly underutilized. Like I thought she was great.
Yeah.
And barely had a part to play, but kept on being like she was a top billed person. And I was like, is there a version of this where you just cut out the romance or something from it? Like, it was there, lingering, but not.
Oh, no, agreed. Realized. It was, I sort of enjoyed that they didn't bloom into a romance for it because I was like, this is just so far-fetched of like, you know, you've only encountered each other in very limited things. But if we're going to be a hyperbolic, you know, situation like this, like, I don't know, you know.
I just wanted her to be given something to do, and it doesn't have to be romance related, but I felt like she was focused on enough to where we should have really gotten to know her. By the end of it, I was like, who was she? But I loved her. liked the actress a lot. And I mean, it doesn't hurt that she was also gorgeous, but I thought she was a good actress. And I was like, oh, yay, a new person, particularly of color that hopefully we'll start seeing in movies in America that I want, you know, whatever. But it just, because I know she has a career in some non-American films. But anyway, I was into all that. But yeah, the villain problem. And then by the time you get to the point where it's like, oh, this guy that we were seeing on the news and whatever, and like, he's the big bad and everything. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, now this is just getting like kind of complicated in a way that just felt like, why?
Right.
But
Very overly, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, at the end of the day, it was harmless. And it was like, you know, if you're you're into the, surprisingly, I mean, a lot of the action, when the action would be there, the action was like actioning. It was like going crazy, but it was a lot of lulls in between it. So I wouldn't call it like, oh, it was just too much action, I was bored, right? Like sometimes that happens. But yeah, in the lulls, the story wasn't really like giving. So it just needed more. But I applaud a first directorial debut effort. Like, this is better than a lot of people would do. And so.
Agreed.
Well, all these debuts, like you talked about.
right. And my thing is, I'm like, if you like John Wick, this is basically John Wick. Sure. So, for me, you know, the John Wick series like got better as it went along, in part because it was just like, cool, you want violence? Here you go. Like, the story is, you know, I mean, look, there's even a dog in it. Like, come on,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I know. But that's the thing is, like, once you establish then it's like, okay, maybe. So I don't know if he wants to do more things or whatnot, but if he did, it's like, well, maybe a sequel would be super fun. I don't know.
I kind of hope.
I don't think we need it, but if it was a thing that he was doing, maybe it would end up being, you know, something fun. But he seems to have gotten the exact revenge he needed in this.
Yeah, I don't think we.
So
need
I'm like, where else are we going from here?
You know? Yeah, surprise! He's back.
The next one's
the
love story. Yeah.
I was gonna say I would actually watch one where it's like they extract revenge on the person who brought her into like that world.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's time for her revenge.
Yeah, if you can have that for free. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we continue with our trans sisters here and just like let's
yes.
You know, like they need revenge on a lot of people.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, we're watching what? We have a lot of catching up to do. What have you been watching?
I'm so just like shamefully behind on so many things. So,
I mean,
like,
it's been chaotic though.
It's been chaotic recently. Like, I feel like this last couple weeks has just evaporated. But I'm, of course, caught up with Palm Royale. I've caught up with Loot. I thought the last episode of Loot was just like
I'm actually behind on Loot.
Okay. Well, yeah. I thought episode
Flash, have not watched any of it because I just want to watch. I want to enjoy it. And I have had so much homework that I'm just like,
Well, you are in for a treat.
I'm so excited.
As you know.
Yes.
And then, actually, it's funny. The last time we talked, I forgot to bring this up. But per your recommendation or I don't know if you recommended it, but you're bringing it to my attention.
Yeah.
I did watch Apples Never Fall, and the one with Sam Neill and
I was like, you're right. I don't know if it was a recommendation, but I did watch
like,
a fair amount. Although I didn't finish it. Yeah,
I don't want to put that on you that you were like, oh, watch this, but because I did think it was kind of bad, but it was also just like
there was just
so
enough to
entertaining.
It, yeah,
like I blasted through it. I think I watched it over the course of a couple of days, just like casually.
Uh-huh.
Just like while doing things, you know, whatever. But like I was interested enough in it, and it was like melodramatic in kind of an unintentionally campy way that felt like it thought it was being really powerful and deep, but really it was kind of like, this is not that well written. That's how I was feeling. But I enjoyed the hell out of all of it.
Yeah.
And it was also very predictable, but I was like, whatever. Like, so I thank you for that.
You're very welcome. I will take credit for it.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I just didn't want to make it sound like you're like, oh, it's so good. You should watch it. You know. Yeah, those things. I think that's most of it. Some random stuff. Like Netflix had like just another kind of unsolved mysteries type of thing that I started watching. And I was like, oh, this is entertaining.
We love a murder.
Love a murder. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially of crows.
True. My favorite type.
That's my favorite kind.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well, maybe something will come to me as you're talking. But
yeah. So I've watched a bevy of things. Film-wise. I watched Girl State, which is a documentary, which is the, you know, counterpart to Boy State. And sadly, this makes me very sad to say, it's not quite as good. I think partially because there are expectations on it. You know, did you see Boy State? Did you like Boy State? Okay. Yeah.
I liked Boy State.
Partially because like there are expectations on it, and partially because I think they are just trying to tackle so many issues in it that it's just like, where do we go with it? But I think it's, if you like Boy State, it's worth watching. I watched a film on Hulu called The Greatest Hits. Pretty cute. Justin Min. Then series-wise, this is where I've been spending most of my time. So I watched all of Fallout, which I really enjoyed. Okay. I loved it.
I've heard it's like a really good adaptation. I've never played the game. So I don't
know. I've played the game a bit, but then it's one of those ones that just got too scary for me. So The thing I like about this and compared to like A Last of Us is that this has a little more sense of humor. And so I can watch it like at night or I could watch it at night. I blazed through it. Like I was not expecting to binge it, but I was just like, this is spectacular.
Wow.
Yeah. So it has a sense of humor to it and it's a little less scary. And then in a different scary way, I watched Baby Reindeer, which came out of nowhere, which is based on, unfortunately, a true story. It is from a British comedian, and he adapted this from his own show that was at like Edinburgh Fringe Festival. It's about a stalker, and then it gets really dark. It gets even darker than having a stalker. It's on Netflix. I do recommend it, but it comes with all the content warnings in the world because it is just, it's so dark.
It sounds like something I'm going to be very interested in.
You are going to burn through it. Like, there's no way you're not going to. What else? I watched The Sympathizer. The first episode is out.
Okay.
It's a challenging adaptation, and I am not ready to pass judgment on it until I've seen more. But I think the Vietnamese actors in it are really good, but it's just a lot of Robert Downey Jr. doing like a Nutty Professor thing where he plays a bunch of white characters. In the first episode, he only plays the same character, but like in later episodes, he plays multiple characters, and I like the idea of subverting the trope of like, oh, all Asian people look alike, with being like, all white people look alike because they're all being played by the same actor. But I don't know if the execution is where I'm at.
Mm.
I am also realizing I watched the first episode of A Gentleman in Moscow, which is that new Ewan McGregor series.
Oh, yeah.
It was okay. It was fine. I just don't feel given how much is on my plate right now, I don't feel particularly compelled. Like Fallout, I was like, I must watch this. Baby Reindeer, I was like, I must watch this. Gentleman in Moscow, I was like, I'm okay.
Okay.
I finally watched, Quiet on the Set, which is that Nickelodeon documentary.
Enjoy it?
I mean, enjoy is not the right word, but yes. Yeah, it's Civil War-esque, right? Where you're like, this is a train wreck and I cannot look away.
Yeah.
I didn't think the follow-up episode was that valuable.
I did not like the follow-up episode. Yeah. Like, that one bugged me because I was like, oh, this is such a cash grab. I was like, this is silly.
Yeah, it felt like a bad, like, you know, I love my 90 Day and Jackie loves 90 Day and stuff like that. Like, it felt like a Bobo version of their reunions where it's just like, there's nothing to be said here, but we dragged this out three episodes.
And it was like, again, like, if you're going to do that, like, we want to hear from other people, not just like, let's just talk. Like,
well,
talk
and like, the, stars, you know, they brought in somebody who had additional things to like imply or confirm, but they didn't actually say anything. So I was just like,
just didn't, yeah, exactly. And it was like,
you know, I believe something happened. Don't get me wrong, but I'm just like,
no, totally. Yeah, it's like that didn't cheapen anything, but it was a thing where it was like, oh, you just wish you were involved in the show and you weren't.
Right. You are riding the wave of these people's trauma.
Exactly.
Which is like, And then in a similar vein, I have to remember what it was because I texted it to you. Oh, The Program, Cons, Cults, and Kidnapping.
Okay.
Which is good. It is about, it's interesting because it has been made by people who have been graduated, is not the right word, escaped from these programs. And it's this deep dive documentary into the absolute just horrors of, you know, these programs that are supposed to like set kids on the right path and so on. But they're basically like prisons who are also lying to the parents about you know, treatment, and some of these kids do not belong there at all, but you know, there's just, and they spoilers, but you know, you find out like they didn't actually get like high school diplomas out of these, and even though they were being told like you're getting an education and all this stuff, so they're just having to deal with, you know, all this stuff, and obviously their treatment is just atrocious, and they're, you know, these are kids who are getting like kidnapped by strangers in order to take them across state lines and like entrap them in these prisons effectively. So
yeah, it's like an elaborate hoax just like to people who just want to abuse children.
Yeah, and so much abuse. Yeah, like so, legally I watched abuse some dark but there's also like actual abuse. So
oh no, I know, but I mean like it's you know, but that's the idea that's like, oh, the
yeah, and like
venting to this because they think, you know,
and to the credit, they ask like the parents like, hey, like why didn't you do something? The parents like, I just didn't believe it was that bad. I thought you were exaggerating, and so it must
be because you were a problem child and you were you couldn't trust anything that you know, like half
kids, but know, some so of them I was like define problem child, so it's
100%, but like to go
that's what it's exploring
that money.
Yeah
you think like, okay, but yeah, that's
yeah, it's three episodes, and to its credit, it's one that's like, it knows how long it needs to be and is exactly that long, and you're just like, okay.
Which also Quiet on the Set was until this bonus episode.
Until this bonus
episode. You know, because I thought that whole thing was like, okay, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. As you were talking, I was like, oh, I also watched, I like two episodes into Sugar on Apple TV.
Yo, right. I was like, oh, Sugar's coming out, and then didn't have a chance to watch.
Kind of mixed on it. I'm curious to know what you think if you watch it. I like Colin and you know, but, you know, and it's a, you know, I like a mystery, but it's kind of going for this like film noir vibe that I don't know works for it that well, but I'm curious. I don't know.
Like, well, similarly, I started Ripley, and I'm surprised that you didn't start
I know. It's because I really want to watch it, and I was like, I feel like I have to do this when I have time to like sit there and watch.
That is very correct.
I'm going to want to watch the whole thing. You know?
Well, and like, also like, half of it's in Italian, so you have to read subtitles. Yeah,
you have to really pay attention. And so I was like, okay. Like I even, like I told you, like I fell behind like on my beloved Shogun. Like,
same. It's
because I was like, I have to sit there and watch this.
And to the credit of at least Shogun, I don't know, Ripley, it holds this place for me. I don't want to compare the two. But like for Shogun, I'm like, I want to enjoy this without feeling stressed out about watching it, which is why we've kind of like dropped off on the, because I'm so behind. And I was just like, I can't binge this without, you know, I just like, I haven't had time to.
Yeah, to be in the headspace and have the time and like all the, all these things.
Yeah. So. And there is that additional component of like, I have to read a little bit, which I don't have any problem with, but I'm just like, I want to.
It's an added layer of like, this needs my full attention and I don't have time right now. Like, and that's why I agree with you. It is very surprising. I have not started Ripley, but that's it. So I'm hoping to do it very soon because I do want to watch that.
Oh,
are you enjoying it?
That's a bummer. It's fine. Although speaking of things that this just came to mind because I watched this today and I don't know how to even bring this up. The Brandy Melville documentary on HBO Max. Oh, it is dark because like, you know, in English, so I could pay attention to it, but I drift away. Like, you know, I was like multitasking and I like look away for, and then it's something like utterly horrific gets cut off. And you're like, how did we get here? Like, how did we bring this up? And so I'd have to like rewind. And then, you know, I'd be like, oh my God. And then I'd watch for like a few more minutes. And then I'd like get distracted by something. I'd be like, wait, how did we get here? You know, like what new atrocities are going to be revealed? So it is full of twists and turns and darkness.
And what is it called? Do you remember? Because I was like, I knew that was happening. And
I want to say it's called Brandy Hellville, but it's.
I
think it might just be Brandy Hellville and the Cult of Fashion. Wow. It is actually legitimately called Hellville. That's funny.
I love that for it. Okay.
And I also was just like vaguely familiar with the brand. Like, I feel like it came to prominence after we were in the era of like the Abercrombie and the Hollister and stuff like that. So I just had no idea that this was, I assumed it was some sort of like weird East Coast elite.
Yeah.
You know,
it's funny
thing.
You say
and
that.
It's darker than that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that. Cause that's Quiet on the Set was kind of like that for me. Like I'm a couple years older than you, but honestly, if you like asked me point blank before that, I wasn't aware that there was like a second cast of all that.
Oh, I wasn't either. Yeah.
And I knew like the Kenan and Kel show. I knew Amanda had a show and I had seen some of it, but I didn't like watch it religiously.
Didn't watch it. I think the reason I was like vaguely familiar with it is because like I have a younger sister, right?
Who's
like a fair amount younger than me.
Right, right.
But even that was not like necessarily her jam, but I
And then like
knew
of I know who Drake Bell is partly because of controversy and stuff, but I had never ever seen Drake and Josh before. I've heard of it, but I never saw
it. And so, that was that was like beyond my sister's time. So.
Yeah. And so it's not like it's a thing where I'm like, oh, this, well, it was still very interesting and horrible and fascinating to watch, but I didn't have like the connection in the way that I think a lot of people do when watching that. And like, whereas it had it been about Amanda Bynes, or had it been, about, you know, like, and
right,
or like the original, or Kenan and Kel speaking out about things, or the original cast of all that, I was like, that was what I watched when I was seven.
I think, the only reason it did not feature Amanda Bynes, not the only reason, but one of the reasons it didn't, is just because like she's not in a state to participate.
No, yeah.
You know. And
I think it was probably for the better it didn't, but I just.
And also, like, clearly, you know, this person has a penchant for boys.
Yeah.
Which is so dark, but not that.
No, I get what you're saying.
All actions are dark in the scenario. It's not that one is worse than another, but I think sometimes, like, male victims are not as believed.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes, like, this is so.
There's like a homophobia, like there's a fear of coming forward. Like, male victims are afraid of coming forward, even more so, possibly.
There can be a. I don't want to say an added layer, but a different layer of, I think, shame.
Yeah, yeah.
That comes with
stigma because of, I mean, it's bad enough, right? It's all bad. It's all terrible.
Yeah. But it's all, yeah, there's no.
And that's how they get, you know, that's how you kind of get, some people get away with it is.
Yeah. But then it's also like, it's all awful and no matter what, but then it's also like, it's so frustrating because you also then just like, I hate it when a harmful stereotype is perpetuated. Right. Like it's like, and so it, like, I hate it when any stereotype is, but course. Like but one where it's like, oh, gay men or this and that, or what drag queens are going through in America right now and all this kind of stuff. And just like, oh, and dangerous not to be around children or whatever. And then like someone can watch something like this and point and like, see, predator.
Right. You know? Or, you know, like, there was, there's the well-known actor whose name I'm not going to say in this moment, just in case the people come out, but who compared it, you know, it was like, oh yeah, like, you know, maybe out of ignorance, but way too late in the game to be ignorant of this. I was like, yeah, well, I'm doing research for a role and like pedophilia and homophobia. I'm like, this is a dark territory that we're not prepared to have the emotional discussion on. So I don't want to,
But yeah.
But I agree with you. Like, had that generation prior come forward, and I'm sure there's some poop there that has yet to be revealed, but I think the most familiar I was with Drake Bell was I kept getting sponsored ads for some musical performance of his. And it was like the most awkward, like he's not in a shirt and he's in like weird jeans. And it was just like, who did this photo? And this was recently, you know, it was just like, who was the photo creative director for these? It was like, okay, I've got it. We're going to sell tickets to your concert doing this. I'm just like, All right. Anyway, Quiet on the Set, episodes 1 through 3. Uh-huh. Horrifying, fascinating. You can skip 4.
And I was going to say, the last thing I watched that I just came to mind was the New Omen.
Oh, I will not be watching that.
And it was fine. I saw some reviews of it like beforehand. Like, I didn't read them all, but like, with basically headlines just kind of being like, oh my, like really, really praising it. And I was surprised.
Yeah, I saw that as well. Yeah. Horror is back. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't know about that, but I will say, it was interesting that I would never recommend that you watch it, but it was interesting
it's
that
it's fine. I will never watch it, so
I know, but I just mean I'm not saying this to be have this talk, but it was almost like it's different in some ways, but almost like beat for beat was literally immaculate, but like a better version of it, I think, but. But it was the same plot as Immaculate in some different ways. But
have you seen the original
Omen?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know, because sometimes you've seen some of the like.
No, I know. It was
But yeah, this is just the prequel to it and exploring
too scary.
Like,
too scary.
Yeah, and you're seeing his birth mom and how that all came to be. Mm. But he is essentially the Antichrist born into, you know, that's who Damien is. Yeah. So it was just like seeing how that all came to be. But I was like, just watching it, I was just like, oh, this is so entirely similar. You know, here we are, we're nun school and we're pregnant and how is it all. And
is there a secret scientist involved?
It wasn't science. It was more ritualistic. So kind of what I wanted Immaculate to be, but she was impregnated against her will. It was like, it was very much like, and then birthing the Antichrist type of thing. So this was darker in so many ways because I just mean that it was I liked it okay. I wouldn't say horror is back because of it. You know,
horror is back, baby.
But it made me think that Immaculate probably raced to come out so that first. Because it's so
otherwise you'd be like, this is just the worst.
Like, oh, you're just being like the Omen.
Oh my god, did you hear about the press campaign for this?
No.
A lot of my friends got these. So they sent out these like super spooky like kid drawings basically of, you know, scary like nuns and stuff like that. And
oh, that's cool.
You know, eventually it became clear to folks like this is from this. But apparently one poor critic or something like that was like running for office. And so they thought they were getting death threats. And I'm just like, oh no.
Oh no. Gone wrong.
So wrong. You know, like field marketing got horribly awry.
Yeah, right. It's like, still accomplishing horror, but
not in the intended way. Yeah. Oopsies.
Not in the intended way at all.
Yeah.
Sorry, we were trying to say Antichrist. Not
Our bad. Our bad.
Yeah, much better.
Yeah. Well, on that note, sign your mail, people.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, as per usual, to Matt. And that is it for this episode. If you enjoyed it, we would love it if you could leave us a 5-star rating, a review, or even consider subscribing.